Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Fourth and final hour. Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Tuesday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a great day. The sun has been out. It's not overcast. It's not raining. Hope you're enjoying your Tuesday here in Middle Tennessee. Let's say hello to Mitch Light from The Athletic, who is working on his new contract with us today. We gave him a new deal at the end of last week in his visit with us on Tuesday. So today he is working under the premise of doubling his pay. So this is probably going to be the best you've ever heard out of Mitch Light. He's going to bring it today. Mitch, how you doing?
We've even renamed the segment now, right? It was Mitch after Mason, then it was Mitch after Fitch, and now it's what, Mitch?
Well, it could next year, if you guys will have me back, it could be Light after Lee, but I'll leave that up to your
market.
I like that.
But, Darren, I'm working on an unsigned contract. I'm staring at it right now. But just,
I decided
to come on the show. Yeah.
I did not know.
That, like, and coaches, they'll be like halfway through a year, and they're like, so-and-so hasn't signed his contract. You're like, what are they? I forgot the term, like working on some sort of agreement. So maybe I'll just keep filibustering. I'll just keep talking about this so we don't, you know, have to actually talk college football. But hope you're doing well.
Yeah, yeah, everything is good. So we had Candace Story Lee on in the second hour of the show to kind of walk us through the process as she announced on our airwaves last night during the 7 o'clock hour. That was official. It was out there yesterday, but we were still waiting for Vanderbilt to make it official, and she did that last night, that indeed Clark Lee will be the next head football coach at Vanderbilt. What do you make of the hire?
Yeah, it was, I would say, predictable. That was one of the first names that came to mind when the opening, you know, is this stuff. Most of the stuff isn't rocket science. Sometimes there will be a candidate from left field that no one's really talking about, but in the Vanderbilt search, at least the finalists, the people we believe they really honed in on at the end were the ones that all of us thought they might. I think it makes a lot of sense in a lot of ways. And I think Joe Rex wrote in his story today at The Athletic, did a great job capturing why Clark Lee might be the ideal fit at Vanderbilt. It's obviously a job that comes with a lot of challenges and seems to be the right time for a guy like Clark Lee. And I think Tim Corbin said this, maybe in Vanderbilt's release, that he said Vanderbilt was fortunate sort of to get Clark at the right time. It just worked out that he was a rising star, so to speak, when Vanderbilt was looking for a coach. If this was 2 years ago, he's a linebackers coach at Notre Dame, not really a candidate. If this is 3 years from now, he might be the head coach at Notre Dame, or he might be the head coach somewhere else. So it worked out. And a funny, just the way things kind of work out, not just in coaching, but I was thinking about this the other day. If Texas A&M, if Kevin Sumlin doesn't implode, although I don't know if he really imploded, they just fired him, but if Kevin Sumlin doesn't get fired and they don't pay Jimbo Fisher $75 million, Clark Lee is probably not the head coach at Vanderbilt. Why? Because Jimbo Fisher wanted to go out and hire one of the best defensive coordinators, and they paid big money to hire Mike Elko away from Notre Dame 2 years ago, 3 years ago. And then Brian Kelly promotes Clark Lee as to be defensive coordinator. So Mike Elko is probably still at Notre Dame if Texas A&M doesn't hire him. And like I said before, Clark Lee is probably a linebackers coach. So kind of my long-winded answer said I think it was the right choice, as I've said throughout the process, that I thought Vanderbilt was very fortunate that there was a really good pool of kind of up either established mid-major coaches or top coordinators. But as we know, and as we look at, we talk about Jim Harbaugh and Scott Frost and Justin Fuente, the ideal fits don't seem to be working out in college football recently, so we just never know.
How encouraged are you that, and we basically got confirmation from Candace earlier in the show. I think I even asked you about this last week. I have been told behind the scenes that don't be surprised, Chancellor Dermeyer is going to be very, very involved in this process. And she basically said it. I mean, she didn't basically. She said he was very involved in this process. How encouraged are you? Because that hasn't always been the case, as you know, at Vanderbilt. But for anybody that loves athletics at Vanderbilt and is rooting for athletics to be successful, to have the chancellor very involved in this process has to be encouraging, right?
But sometimes it can be a be careful what you wish for. I think it was a good, in this case, because Chancellor Dermeyer seems to get it, seems to know what he was looking for, and seems to be on the same page with Candace. I think there are some cases, not just at Vanderbilt, though, you have school presidents and chancellors who want to get involved and don't know what they don't know. And these guys are running universities, so they think they know everything. So you might have a guy in there that gets wowed by the wrong things. But I think in this case it was a good thing because it kind of shows everyone's on the right page. But there's plenty of examples in college athletics where you almost have too many cooks in the kitchen, and you have a school president making decisions because they think they're the smartest guy in the room when that's really not their area of expertise.
We had Bruce Feldman on the show yesterday, and I said, "Can I tell you something funny?" He said, "Sure." I said, "Remember when we all thought that these coaches had a pass this season? You know, and here we are talking about now the third opening in the SEC. And Auburn has to pay $21.5 million for Gus Malzahn to go away in the middle of a pandemic. Hopefully we're on the back end of a pandemic. But what did you make? And I know, you know, this has been going on for a while. It just didn't happen this past week. This has been going on for a while. For whatever reason, there just hasn't been that love affair the last couple of years for Gus Malzahn. I guess he's just not winning at a high enough clip for them. What did you make of that move?
I was surprised, definitely. He's a guy that's had some success, obviously. Beat Nick Saban 3 times. It's always difficult from the outside looking in. Like, you know, who are we to tell Auburn that should be enough? You know, it's their school.
Yeah.
That's kind of my approach. Like, you know, not that the fans or the local media should decide, but sometimes we just, you know, who are we to tell them that not to make a move? One thing about Auburn, too, and I don't know all the details, but, you know, people are just going crazy about the money and the payout. It seems to be that that's going to be booster paid there, which is sometimes the case, sometimes it's not the case. So it's not like the school's blowing all this money. But, again, it's a ton of money to pay a coach. So the thing is, when you make a move like that, it seems like you've got the next guy lined up because that's a high-profile move. And you know, I know there's a lot of debate internally at Auburn about Hugh Freeze. So I expected the next 2 days later after that move to, you know, them to have Hugh Freeze locked up as the next head coach. Now they have a search firm. Looks like it will not be imminent. And you just talk to people and you read things. This is a very Auburn thing too. Like I said before, too many cooks in the kitchen. Supposedly the athletic director, Alan Green, I believe his name is, doesn't want Hugh Freeze because of the NCAA infractions. But shockingly, there's some boosters who do want him. There's a push for Kevin Steele, the defensive coordinator. And I know this was a long time ago.
Which is amazing.
But listen, I mean, I know you guys have probably talked about this. Listen to these numbers for Kevin Steele as the head coach at Baylor.
It's one brutal.
It's not suitable for work. 1-31 in the Big 12 in
Yikes.
4 years. Average margin of defeat, 32.5 points per game. Only one of his 31 losses was by fewer than 14 points.
Oof.
One more. In the last 25 years, Steele has the worst average point differential as a head coach with a minimum of 40 games. I know it was a long time ago, and I know Baylor wasn't very good, but you fire Gus Malzahn to hire that guy, who's done a great job as a defensive coordinator, very well respected. But I just, if that's what they end up with, and the one more thing about Gus Malzahn, though, and I'm sure he's a smart guy and he's a good offensive coach, but a decade ago, Gus Malzahn's offenses were fun, productive, you know, power running game. They did all really fun stuff. He has not, I think I heard the other day, and I could easily look this up, but it's like the last 5 years they haven't finished in the top half of the SEC. they have not been good offensively. So that's kind of Gus Malzahn's.
Yeah, why is that? I brought that up yesterday, Mitch, because really, when you get down to it, since he's been there, they've been known more for their incredible defense than their offense.
Defensive line, yeah.
Yes.
I don't think they've had the great quarterback. I mean, Jarrett Stidham's in the NFL. Bo Nix has not. He's been way too inconsistent. I mean, some of his – I really jumped on board the Gus Malzahn bandwagon. I forgot the guy's name, but the year that the they had the junior college former defensive back at Georgia who became their quarterback, and their offense was incredible. But they had great running backs. They had Kerryon Johnson and those guys. And I'm just trying to blank on – was it Marshall? The quarterback's name?
Yes, yes.
I was just like, at that point, you're like, okay, he can plug anyone in at quarterback and they're going to be good. And, you know, they've had weird offensive line turnovers. It's like where they've had four starters back and then the next year no starters back. And I don't know if there's been a lack of continuity in the offensive line. There's been a lot of turnover at the offensive line staff. They've had good receivers the last 2 years. Like I said, I'm sure he's a smart guy. His offense is, he should be able to adjust, but there's clearly – something missing there because they have not been consistently good on offense in the last 5 years.
Talking to
Nick
Mitch Light,
I think. Yeah.
We're talking to Mitch Light from The Athletic and talking about some college football things, of course, as the wheels are turning here, championship week coming up on Saturday. But, Mitch, one or two more on the Clark Lee thing. I was reading through a very comprehensive article by Joe Rexroad, who I know you're working close with The Athletic team. And this was an interesting point that Wake Forest, I even asked Candace Story about the whole lining up with Northwestern and the whole idea of you got an alumni and Pat Fitzgerald who wants to be there. He's built a really solid program year after year. That's a really good model to look at. But Joe actually brought up Wake Forest, a place that Clark Lee made a stop at. That's another good parallel to what Vanderbilt maybe is trying to build.
That's a case of just, and I'm sure they've had some good investment, all that stuff. That's just a case of making a good hire, Dave Clawson, and letting him do his thing. You know, I know.
And think about the craziness, how crazy that might sound to a Tennessee fan, right? That Dave Clawson was the perfect hire for Wake Forest.
Right. Well, go look at his Wikipedia page. I mean, he was good everywhere as a head coach. He's been, won FCS, then went back to Bowling Green and did well there before Wake Forest. He's just a really solid coach who sounds like a cliche. Just built it the right way. They recruited, they redshirted, they took it on the chin early, and they've had good quarterbacks. That's the thing. They've kind of struck it with quarterbacks, and as we saw, Kendall Hinton, the quarterback of the Broncos, was a quarterback and wide receiver at Wake Forest, and they just now winning, being a 6-7-8 win team in the ACC is different than the SEC. Like the top of the ACC is obviously very, very good, but there's just the middle and bottom. There's easier room for upward mobility there, but yeah, I think that's a good example of just hiring the right guy and being patient with him and not expecting immediate dividends. Now, I don't care where you are, college football, it's about commitment, but it's about coaching. When you got the right coach in place, you're gonna have a chance to be good. And when you don't, you're not going to be good. Look at Stanford. You know, before Jim Harbaugh, they had some really difficult years. Buddy Tevens' era didn't go well. There's coaches that did not win there. They hired a great coach in Jim Harbaugh and kind of got it rolling. So it's really about just finding the right coach and the right fit for your school.
Any thoughts? I know with the staff, there's a lot of connections. He's been a lot of places. But do you have any names that come to mind that Vanderbilt fans might be thinking about that might – come along with Clark Lee somewhere?
This is interesting, too, because Clark Lee has been around a lot, so he has, connections all over the place. I think this last staff that Derek Mason had was maybe his best staff. Now, it's a big, Andy Ludwig fan when he was offense coordinator here. I thought he did a good job. So here's the question. I'm just throwing this out there. If you're a new head coach and you're not a current head coach, so it's not like you're bringing your staff with you, and the program has struggled in recent years, do you want to clean house? Do you want to bring all your guys? Or, because Tim Horton, Vanderbilt's running backs coach, was at Auburn before, very well respected. Offensive line coach, Pete Rossomondo, that offensive line overachieved this year. If you know what the personnel issues they had, they overachieved. So there are some guys on that staff that would be enticing to bring back. Jovan Hay, I'd be surprised if he is not retained. He's the defensive line coach who played with Clark Lee and has been one of the team's most effective recruiters.
What about Kyle Shermer?
Kyle Shermer, well, he might still be trying to, you know, play in the NFL. But yeah, I mean, he was an assistant. He was a volunteer. I don't know if he'd be ready to be like a position coach yet. But Norval McKenzie was a running back from Marietta, Georgia, who played for Bobby Johnson and was a backfield mate of Clark Lee. He's the running backs coach at, Louisville. I know when he was at Arkansas State, Norvell tried to get in the picture for a job at Vanderbilt. I don't know if he'd leave Louisville for Vanderbilt, but you think he would, you know, to coach with his former teammate there. So, you know, and I'm sure there's some staffers, maybe not existing position coaches, but some staffers at Notre Dame that he'd bring with him. So, you know, that's going to be important. And as you guys probably talked about today, there's not – he needs to get the staff going, obviously. But with signing day tomorrow through Friday – looks like a lot. Most of their recruits are going to sign. It's not like they need to have five or six staffers in place recruiting like crazy. That's one weird benefit of the calendar this year. They can get this class signed, and then he can go back to his Notre Dame duties and work, you know, get the staff ready and recruit for February. But they're going to have 80% of their class knocked out in the next few days.
Of course, everybody will be curious to see who he names as the offensive coordinator, with him being a defensive coordinator.
Yeah. I mean, that's Todd Fitch, I thought, did a good job this year. It's very well respected. I wouldn't be shocked if Todd Fitch, you know, if he, what his future, we don't know what his future is, but, you know, he's a guy that I'm sure Clark Lee will talk to.
Yeah. Speaking of Clark Lee's task this week, I think everybody's curious to see Act Two, right? They beat Clemson. It seems like if you're going to beat Clemson, you're going to have to outgun them somewhere. So, good defense is a relative term, right? You got to get the timely stop, maybe a couple of key turnovers. But this may be a much more difficult task the second time around. Of course, Trevor Lawrence, but also on a neutral field, all of that stuff. How do you see this game? What kind of shot does Notre Dame have?
Yeah, you know, I didn't think they had, even without Trevor Lawrence, I didn't think, you know, I picked Clemson. I have to go back to the tape, but I'm sure I picked Clemson to win that game. Clemson would be my pick now. You know, I just think they, with Lawrence back and you know, Etienne, they have so many weapons. And, you know, I don't know, the revenge factor, you know, obviously they want to win this game because they want to make the playoffs. So, I mean, it's a tough task. And you know, it's been a theme of college football. And obviously Nick Saban's talked about it with how great the offenses are now. And you kind of mentioned it, timely stops. You're not going to hold Clemson to 250 yards and, you know, 3 yards of play. They're going to move the ball. They're going to score some points. Can you keep them out of the end zone? Can you force them to kick field goals? That's the key, obviously. Force a turnover here or there. I think one thing Notre Dame has going for it, and it sounds simple, but they beat Clemson. There's a belief in that locker room. And you can talk about believing, and you can talk about we're Notre Dame, we should be able to beat any team in the country. But, you know, they played them in the playoff a couple years ago, and they got run off the field. There's no shame in that. That was a great Clemson team. But those guys know, Ian Book, fifth-year senior quarterback, those guys know that they, not that they can win, that they have beaten them. So I think that is a huge, there's no awe, there's no fear factor at all. So I'm looking forward to the game. I just hope with all the championship games, we get some close games, because in the past few years, too many of these have been way too lopsided.
We're talking to Mitch Light from The Athletic. And along those lines, I asked this question earlier to Pete Sampson, your colleague at The Athletic that covers Notre Dame, but we've talked about Brian Kelly and what he's done there and the success that he's had, but winning the big one, whether it's a national championship or now, of course, he finds himself in a conference championship game, which is unusual for Notre Dame. I know they beat Clemson earlier in the year, but as you just brought up, having Trevor Lawrence there makes this an even bigger game. So do you feel like there's a little extra pressure, even though with a loss they could still be in the playoff, for him to win one of these big games?
That's a good question. I would say no. My take on Notre Dame, and, you know, Willie and Darren, who kind of were all the same age, Chase, you're a little bit younger. My opinion and expectations, they've changed over the years. You know, growing up, Notre Dame was a championship program. They won the national championship in 88. You expect them to be in the national title hunt. Then they had that stretch there where they just weren't consistently good, and you're like, okay, their time has passed. Now I think they're not Ohio State, Clemson, Alabama, even Georgia in that range as far as programs. But now I think they've kind of elbowed their way back into, we are a solid top 10 program that can be in position to compete for national championships. And I think the fact that Brian Kelly has got them back there, the fact that they beat Clemson, I don't think this game is a referendum on their program at all. I think he's had a great 3-year run right now. And if they can keep the ball rolling, then it's kind of, they've reestablished themselves as a, I'm going to call them a second tier national power, which I think, and you guys speak up, 5-10 years ago, I didn't think, most people probably didn't think we'd be talking about Notre Dame in this light, that they're a program that can compete for a national championship. But they're there. I mean, as we've learned, there's a huge difference in the playoff era between making the playoff and winning a national championship. To make the playoff, you got to be a pretty good team. To win a national championship, you have to show the ability to beat two elite teams in back-to-back games, which is obviously very difficult.
Mitch, Alabama, Florida, and the SEC championship. What do you make, though, of the comments Dan Mullen had after the loss to LSU of saying, you know, I can only control what I can control, but maybe we should have played less games, which was an obvious shot at maybe the Big Ten or the ACC, take your pick, and then you have Dabo Swinney kind of going at what Greg Sankey said. So there's all these pot shots being thrown around because of the number of games. And I think this is something that we expected when it came to talking about the college football playoff. But what are your thoughts on some of these comments?
Well, I just credit Dan Mullen for overcoming so much adversity as the head football coach at University of Florida, with all the hurdles that you have to, you know, and the difficulties building a program and winning.
Shoe throwing.
Yeah, just shut up. I mean, you are a great coach. You have a great team this year. You can think that privately, and he makes a good point. I mean, of Ohio State, of all programs, we have learned in recent years, navigating a 12-game regular season is not always the easiest. You might lose at Purdue. You might lose at Iowa. But in this strange year, you got as far as you did, and if Marco Wilson doesn't throw the shoe, you probably win that game. Just don't say out loud everything you think. That's kind of my, you know, we want coaches to speak up. I get that. But in that case, he just comes off like a sore loser. And he's not changing. It's not the playoff selection committee guys, they're not sitting there going, you know what? I never thought of that. Thanks, Dan.
That's right.
It's like coaches petitioning the NCAA tournament committee in college basketball. You're not changing anyone's mind. All you're trying to do is get the public on your side, the fans on your side, so after you don't get in, then everyone's like, oh, they got screwed. It's like, I mean, I get it's politicking. It's done in sports and everywhere, but it's just, you know, I just kind of rolled my eyes when I saw that.
And
by the way, guys, I know slight change of subject here. Just think about University of Florida football, and we're talking about fits and coaches and guys, you know, hiring coaches. Florida, after Steve Spurrier, Jeremy Foley's considered one of the best athletic directors in SEC history. He hired 4 football coaches. 3 of them did not work out, or I wouldn't call them spectacular failures. And Urban Meyer, the one he hired, was an absolute layup slam dunk. Like, anyone could have hired him. So, you know, Ron Zook, Will Muschamp, and Jim McElwain at the University of Florida. So 3 out of 4 hires there didn't work out. That tells you how hard it can be to make these hires.
I feel like, too, with Dan Mullen, just a quick side note, that it's like wrestling. You know, he was the baby face. Everybody liked him at Mississippi State. You know, then he makes the heel turn. He turns on Hulk Hogan, and he moves to Florida. That's just kind of what it's been with him.
Yeah. I mean, the quote knock on him, and maybe why he didn't get other jobs earlier, is he has the reputation as being the smartest guy in the room, and comes, you know, isn't afraid to tell people that in interviews, and comes across that way. And he is, maybe he's the smartest guy in the room. He's a great coach, and he's had success everywhere. And he if he stays at Florida long term, no doubt though, in my opinion, they'll win a national championship. But maybe he doesn't care how he comes off. Some coaches are just tone deaf, and they don't realize, you know, how they're being perceived, or they don't, like I said, they don't care. So it's something for us to talk about. We spent 5 minutes talking about Dan Mullen. You know, what a great game and weird comment that was.
Yeah, absolutely. Alabama, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Clemson, the current top 4. In your mind, what has to happen this weekend for that to change? Not necessarily in that order, but those 4 teams.
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about this, and I mean, obviously Ohio State getting upset, that's not likely, but that would be the easiest scenario for that to change. Notre Dame beating Clemson, I would have to see how Clemson plays, but I would think a 2-loss Clemson team would have a tough time making it over Texas A&M. You know, so I mean, that's Texas A&M's best hope. Texas A&M needs to come out, and they can't just beat Tennessee 20-14. I think that it's a beauty contest for them. I think they need to look really good doing so. this week. So I think, you know, Notre Dame beating Clemson is obviously a huge, that could really shake things up again. Florida losing now, Florida beating Alabama, Florida's not going to make it. Alabama's going to make it even if they lose there. So I think the slim chance that Ohio State loses is something to watch out for, than obviously the Notre Dame beating Clemson.
Michigan, Iowa has now joined Purdue and Indiana. Those Big Ten games will not take place this weekend.
Yeah,
I'm sure
just,
Jim Harbaugh is probably throwing a party, because I can't imagine that he wants to coach any more games this year with this team. So add them to the list. Not playing.
It's been a difficult year. Now that, you know, early signing period tomorrow, for all the things going wrong at Michigan, they've got a top 10 recruiting class that could get even better. They got a five-star quarterback coming in. So if he's back, like it looks like he's going to be back, that, you know, maybe they just reset things, make some staff changes. They will have some talent next year, but, you know, obviously that's been, talent's usually not the issue at Michigan last years at least.
Will they have the same safeties coach next year, Mitch?
I don't think so. To quote my good friend Beavis, I'm not sure if it was Beavis or Butthead who used to say, kind of gone in burrito instead of incognito there. So we haven't.
Did you say your good friend?
Wouldn't you guys love Beavis and Butthead? I love both those guys.
Yeah, they're all of our friends from that.
I just know you guys were tight. That's all. Of course, I know the reference, but yeah.
Chase, are you familiar with Beavis and Butthead?
Oh yeah, big time.
Okay. Yeah, I spent way too many hours in my apartment in New York after college watching Beavis and Butthead. So, but you know, I'm an adult now, so you know, maybe I don't watch them anymore. Although I did do some YouTube. I was showing my son Beavis and Butthead the other day, but you know. I don't think you
as any
friend.
Good father would, right? Show your teenager Beavis and Butthead.
Okay, come here. Let's spend 4 hours watching Beavis and Butthead.
I have an AC/DC shirt. Does that count?
Nah, I've called you certain things that are very similar to Butthead.
you have, Mitch.
This interview has kind of gone off the rails a little bit.
I love it.
Well, I mean. The fact is, you wouldn't have known that you didn't sign the contract. I thought you brought it today, so job well done, you know, for not signing the contract. It felt like a signed deal.
I'm a professional. I'll perform contract or no contract.
All right, Beavis. Thank you. Really appreciate it. Thanks for doing this. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Mitch Light. And who knows? Light after Lee could be a reality.
I like it.
Next year. He's with The Athletic. We will come back. More on the other side. It has been an action-packed show, as you can imagine. Here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
But first, I'm going to tell you how you can make every game interesting. It's BetMGM. Sign up for BetMGM Sports and get your first bet risk-free up to $500 when you use the bonus code, very simple, write this down, 1025GAME. That's 1025GAME. Now when a player makes a splash, you have a chance to make some major cash. Nice play on words there. I love BetMGM. I've been using them for several months now. I've had a lot of success, and I know a lot of you have as well. BetMGM makes every game matter more with innovative parlay selection features, in-play betting, daily boosted odds specials, and much more. They have all your favorite sports, so it's easy to find them there. They're the same people that light up the Las Vegas Strip with the world's best casinos and sportsbooks. They're ready to light up your device with opportunities to win big. It's a very simple process. You can download the app today or go to BetMGM.com. Use that bonus code 1025GAME to get back up to $500 in free bets on your first wager. Tennessee sports fans will always bet fearlessly at BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. You must be 21 years or older. Must be present in Tennessee. For problem gambling support, call the Tennessee Red Line at 800-889-9789.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/Ohio's time.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. we've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.